It was disconcerting to see. Either Baneth wanted to honor them, or he wanted to keep an eye on them. Or both. After Lani's initial reaction to Baneth's order, Sage didn't dare ask who Tamoza was, or had been. But from the opulence of the rooms, and the absence of Reza's mother, it wasn't hard to guess. While Sage bathed, Lani disappeared, and returned carrying a dress in a similar style to what she herself wore, with long draped sleeves and a square collar. But the color was a pinkish orange Sage knew would make her look sickly. She wondered if Lani had done that on purpose, until the princess scrunched her lips to the side as she looked at her and apologized, saying it was probably the only dress she had that would remotely fit her. Lani had given her clothes from her own wardrobe. The princess was a little taller and far more shapely, though. Sage expected to spend the entirety of dinner shifting her outfit to keep the neckline from hanging so low, but Lani produced a golden sash to help secure it.
"What are Damoran dresses like, Saish?"
the princess asked, as she tied a knot that somehow looked like a rosebud. She hadn't worn a dress since Tenegal. Alex had liked the dark blue one best. Sage struggled to push the thought out of her mind and find something within her grasp of the language.
"Skirts are much bigger, and women often wear what is called a corset."
She gestured to her waist.
"It makes the middle look small and holds you straight."
"I would not need that," Lani said loftily.
The prince entered from a side door that connected their rooms, his copper curls slicked down with water. His formal outfit was much like the one Baneth had worn when they met him, but Nicholas was swimming in the knee-length jacket and its high collar.
"You are both ready," said Lani, nodding her approval. "Someone will be here shortly to take you to dinner, but if you will excuse me, I still have my own preparations to make."
She swept out gracefully, making Sage wonder how in the world she could add to her appearance.
"What now?"
said Nicholas. He looked like a little boy wearing his father's clothes. Together, Sage suspected they looked like lost children, but maybe that was better. They didn't look threatening.
"I want to see your rooms," Sage said, and he led her back the way he'd come.
The door between the suites had a lock, but only on Sage's side. She inspected his rooms, memorizing all access points.
"Do you not trust Baneth?" Nicholas asked her.
"It's not necessarily him I'm concerned about," she replied, pushing on the wall for signs of hidden doors. "Princess Lani said something that made me think not everyone here is happy about our arrival."
She turned around and saw the prince had gone a pasty color.
"Spirit above, Nicholas, I'm just being cautious."
"It's not that," he said. "I was remembering what you said on the road, about how I could be negotiating treaties in a few years."
The smile she returned felt as good as the one earlier.
"I don't think you'll be negotiating the treaties that come from this directly, but what you do and learn will have a huge effect on everything, maybe for the next 100 years. Present yourself well and learn all you can."
Nicholas closed his eyes and shuddered, clenching his fists. Sage stepped closer and put an arm around him.
"You'll do fine. Don't worry." "I'm scared," he said.
Tears began to stream down his cheeks.
"I can hardly understand anything people say, and the food is strange, and the clothes are itchy, and I thought you liked the food."
Her feeble joke didn't help.
"I want my mother, Sage," Nicholas sobbed. "I want to go home."
In only the last month, the prince had gained an inch on her, which had made it easy for Sage to forget he was little more than a boy, and a sheltered one at that. All things considered, he'd held up pretty well until now.
"I'll get you home, Nicholas," she said. "That's a promise." "What if they won't let us leave?"
He sniffed
and wiped his nose on his gold-threaded sleeve.
What if they find out who I really am?
I've been thinking about telling them, but let me make that decision. Sage stepped back and straightened his jacket, forcing him to look her in the eye. As for not letting us leave, we'll deal with that when it happens. I'll get us home. Just trust me.
Chapter 78. Besides the king and Princess Lani, two council members were present at dinner. They sat on either side of Baneth, discussing matters of state. Sage was across from Nicholas, who had apparently recovered his appetite, and next to the Minister of War, a pompous, piggy-eyed man who reminded Sage of her Uncle William, with less bathing. Lani sat at the opposite end of the table from Baneth, now wearing a necklace that complemented the golden glow of her skin and sparkled with rubies as red as her painted lips. From the way her eyes rested on everything in the room, except the Minister of Finance, Sage suspected most of Lani's appearance was aimed at him. Not that Sage could blame her. Though he was probably twice Lani's age, he was fit and handsome, with graying hair that gave him an air of wisdom and gravity. Definitely preferable to the man next to Sage, who kept looking at her and sniffing like there was something rotten in her dress. As neither minister had shared water with Sage or Nicholas, however, Lani was left to entertain them. Sage had to remind herself the Kazmuni were actually being polite by ignoring her. But at one point, she said something to Lani about how odd it felt.
I can see what you mean, said Lani. But the whole council will share water with you when you are presented to them.
Sage glanced nervously at Nicholas.
When will that be?
The day after tomorrow, replied Baneth
from the head of the table. The two ministers sat back a little to stay out of the conversation.
Tomorrow, Lani will take you into the city to find some clothes. Darrett will take Nicholas.
Sage didn't like the idea of separating from Nicholas, but if she trusted anyone, it was Darrett.
Of course, said Lani brightly. We will go right after the council meeting.
She turned to Sage.
Tomorrow morning the council meets to go over all Baneth has missed.
Baneth cleared his throat.
I meant you should do this instead of attending the council.
Lani froze, her eyes darting to the Minister of Finance.
I have presided over all the sessions in your absence. I should be there.
Our guests should be properly outfitted, and Minister Cinda and I have just discussed funds for it. You love shopping.
Go!
Baneth waved his hand dismissively.
It will only be mundane updates and audits.
That is exactly why I should be there, Lani insisted. What if something is missed?
Sage leaned back in her seat, feeling awkward. This was the second time the pair had almost argued in her presence. The finance minister spoke up.
I can personally assure Palachessa that nothing shall be omitted.
Lani met his eyes, and many unspoken words passed between them. Apparently, the attraction wasn't entirely one-sided. Then the princess tossed her head.
It seems I am not wanted, she said, going back to her food. Just remember who gave me permission to spend tax money on clothes.
The minister sat forward again and resumed their conversation with the king. But Sage now had better reasons to study the man on Baneth's right. By the time the dessert of Zara fruit in cream and cinnamon was served, Sage was certain Lani and Minister Cinda had shared more than water. After Nicholas was settled for the night, Sage went for a walk. Her primary intention was to see where the outer doors of their quarters led, but she also wanted to see how the king's guard would react to her wandering the palace halls alone. Having been here only a few hours, she could easily claim she was lost. High windows were set under the arched two-story ceilings. During the day, they allowed hot air to flow out, but now, the moonlight pouring in, reflected off the white stone walls, illuminating the passage without torches. At first, Sage avoided guards, wanting to finish a sweep of the passage that wrapped around the royal family's rooms and private courtyard. Her count of the doors against the ones she'd seen in her and Nicholas's rooms indicated at least one set in each led into other places, most likely servants' passages. She made it all the way to the far end without being seen, but on the way back, she heard voices and prepared herself to look lost. The voices didn't come toward her, though. Sage debated whether to approach or wait for the conversation to end. She was near Princess Alania's rooms, and one of the voices was feminine, so Sage crept a little closer. Lonnie had been friendly enough, but when Sage identified the second voice as Minister Cinda's, she decided interrupting them might not be ideal, especially when the princess's tone turned angry.
"You didn't even try, Dev," she said, her voice straining to stay low. "You have always insisted I be there, yet now I don't seem to matter."
"No, Lonnie, you matter more than anything," Minister Cinda answered in a pleading voice, sounding very different from his confident baritone at dinner. "I just have to agree with him right now, don't you see? I need to be on his good side before I ask him for what we want."
Lonnie sighed. "I suppose this meeting isn't important for me," she admitted.
"I think this is actually a good thing," he said. "Getting to know this foreign woman better can only help your brother."
"Will I see you in the afternoon?" Lonnie asked hopefully. Sage was now close enough to see the shadow of Minister Cinda pressing Lonnie up against the wall. The Chess's hands were on his jacket collar, holding him close. Cinda shook his head, and Sage backed away from watching and just listened.
"I'm auditing the prison accounts, remember? Because of the council meeting, I have to go in the afternoon."
"There is a new commissar down there. Baneth brought him in with the Demorins." Sage hadn't seen the man Derek captured since their arrival at Baneth's camp. She'd almost completely forgotten about him.
"Really? General Caladan would be interested in talking to him," said Cinda.
"You should tell him then. It could make him like you better."
"We've been on better terms lately, but that's a good suggestion."
"That reminds me," said Lonnie. "My maid said she heard from his manservant that he's planning to retire."
"Caladan?"
She must have nodded. "I can think of someone worthy of taking his place."
"I have a job already."
"Not for much longer if I have my way," the princess said. There was a long pause, followed by a sigh. Sage's face grew hot. This was definitely not a conversation she wanted to be caught overhearing. "Someone is coming," whispered Lonnie. "Oh no."
"I'll leave," said Minister Cinda.
Lonnie's reply was a little breathless. "I have a better idea." Sage heard a door open and close, then silence. She slowly released the breath she'd been holding and clasped her trembling hands. That had been close. Heavy, boot-clad footsteps echoed down the curved corridor. The regularity indicated a guard. Sage jumped out of the shadows before it could look like she was hiding. A few seconds later, a man carrying a spear and wearing a curved sword came around the bend, and the relief on her face was genuine.
"Can you help me?"
Sage threw out her hands in appeal, and so he could see she had no weapons.
"I cannot find my room."
Chapter 79. The cell block was empty, other than Alex and the two Kimisar. Alex managed to sleep a bit before Cameron woke. Then he spent a good hour telling the brothers about Gizpan's family and where he'd grown up, which, fortunately, was far from their home. They knew the places Gizpan's memories described, however, and Alex's account of the wildfire that killed Gizpan's family seemed to seal him as genuine in their eyes. Stesh told him Baneth was the name of the prince of the Kazmuni camp,
and he was, in fact, the nation's king. The Khemisar were glad to hear he'd returned to Ustiza. Perhaps death sentences required royal approval, as they did in Demora. The pair had been here for over a month, which was probably why their imminent execution didn't faze them anymore. A man waiting for death could only care for so long. Alex also recounted Hazar's actions for Cameron. He too was unimpressed.
Should have just waited a few more months. Now he's brought the whole Demoran army down on his head.
Why should he have waited? Asked Alex.
Once the South Pass has dried up, King Ragat will march through and take Demora from behind, Stesh said, referring to Kimisara's ruler, who'd been on the throne for over 40 years now. Of course, Hazar's actions put troops in our way, jackass.
Alex shook his head.
Jovan is sealed tight. I doubt our army can get through.
Stesh cocked his head and drew his brows down.
We mean the pass here, in Kasman.
Alex had a vague sense there was another pass through the Catrix, but he knew little else. It was safe to assume if Kasman and Kimisara hated each other enough to send assassins, the pass was heavily guarded. Alex feigned puzzlement.
That one would be even harder to cross. They'll have to fight through Kasmuni first. Not if they get out of the way, said Cameron with a grin.
He resembled his brother in the color of his eyes and most other features, except the nose. Cameron's was crooked from a previous break, while the daintiness of Stesh's was apparently a source of brotherly teasing. Both were paler than the average Kasmuni, which might have explained how they were caught.
Enough talking, said Stesh. The more we babble, the more likely we are to be overheard.
He pointed to the grate in the ceiling that let in light and air. The two men retreated to the back of their cells and sat side by side, talking quietly through the bars. Alex lay back down, though he was unable to sleep. He knew the Demoran army was strained and how few defenses were on the east side of the mountains. That was why the king had been so concerned by the evidence of Kasmuni intrusions. If he was going to pull resources from Tasmit, it had to be absolutely necessary. Despite what Cameron said, though, it was unlikely many forces would be brought across the mountains to chase Hazar, especially if Lieutenant Kasich and Ash Carter were able to convince Colonel Trasden what was really going on. That left the Ten Valley wide open for an invasion force from the south, hugging the mountains until it was past the Kasmuni Desert. Letting the Khemisar army march through Kasman was dangerous, however, even if that part was uninhabited. Once the supplies required to get thousands of men across hundreds of miles of barren land were through the mountains, there was nothing to stop them from heading for the Kasmuni capital instead. Risk aside, King Baneth's imprisonment of Alex, Gizpan, and the Dolophon, coupled with his honoring of Sage and Nicholas, went against that idea. His sympathies were clearly Demoran. He'd been gone for months, however, and the Dolophon had been captured several weeks ago. If Kimisara couldn't barter passage, maybe they only needed to distract Kasman long enough to get through. An assassination would easily accomplish that. Fortunately, the men had been caught. Something wasn't quite right, though. Stesh and Cameron were too unconcerned about failing their mission. Rather, they acted like it simply wasn't complete yet. The more Alex thought about it, the more he felt sure there was a traitor within Kasmuni high circles. Someone stood to gain from Baneth's death, and that someone would release these men when the time was right. By holding the Khemisar in prison, they were already inside the palace perimeter. The king of Kasman was about to be murdered, and there was no way Alex could warn him. Chapter 80. Despite her initial objections to shopping, Princess Lani walked through the marketplace with a bounce in her step. She linked arms with Sage and led her through the streets and into a dizzying array of shops.
As quickly as she was met at the doors and offered the latest items and styles, Baneth's sister must have been a common sight and a free spender, Sage thought. Sage herself wasn't much for shopping. She was more interested in the city itself. The rooftop gardens, she learned, weren't just for food and decoration. They provided natural cooling for the homes and businesses. Abundant water from the Seven Springs ran beneath homes in canals and along gutters in the streets, providing both waste removal and additional cooling.
"Do you always ask so many questions?" Lonnie said, after she'd finished explaining the network that delivered the soiled water as fertilizer to the fields between the city and the river.
"Yes," Sage replied, "but you know so much."
"Attend as many council meetings as I have, and sewer facts will be drilled into your head," the princess said dryly. "I think half their time is spent explaining everything, like I can't remember the 10 times they told me before."
Men love to hear themselves talk. Sage had never attended such a high meeting, but Alex said almost the same thing about them. Alex. The thought of him hit her so unexpectedly, she stopped in the middle of the street.
"Are you well, Sage?"
Lonnie looked at her with concern.
"Your face is white as a Zara flower."
Sage wiped cold sweat from her forehead.
"I am well. My thoughts were not pleasant."
She pushed them from her mind.
"But you have remembered me to ask about your exclusion from the council today."
Lonnie's expression changed, anger making the green in her eyes dominate the brown.
"If it weren't for Minister Cinda, I would still be on the outside of matters. But when I came of age last year, he insisted I be allowed to attend. He said it was only right, as I was now able to make decisions in Baneth's absence."
No wonder she admired the man.
"Minister Cinda sounds like someone I would like," said Sage.
Lonnie relaxed and smiled.
"Once you have shared water with him, I know you will."
"His looks are good too, I think," said Sage, slyly. Jealousy flashed across Lonnie's face.
"He is too old for you."
"Really?" Sage said innocently.
"I am only 1 year younger than my princess."
Lonnie realized Sage was teasing and scowled at her.
"How did you know about us?"
There was no way Sage would admit what she'd overheard last night, but she had observed the attraction at dinner.
"The true question is how my king could not notice," she said. "But I was learned to see such things."
"Learned?"
"At home, I worked for a matchmaker."
Sage used the Demorin word.
"A woman who creates marriages."
Lonnie's brow furrowed.
"I thought you were Nicholas's sister."
"Oops." Sage needed to be more cautious about what she said.
"Yes, but he gets all the land, so I must work."
Lonnie nodded sympathetically, and they continued along their way, Sage telling the princess more carefully chosen details about her background and learning much about Lonnie herself.
"You train in combat too?"
the princess asked, as she straightened the shoulders of a dark green dress on Sage in a shop. The outfit was similar to the one she'd worn last night, but the color and fit were much better.
"You should join Reza and me in the afternoons."
Sage blinked in surprise. Teshevar didn't seem like a very princess-like thing to do, and she said so.
"I have studied Teshevar since I was 6, said Lonnie.
"When a girl has no mother, it is considered a sign she should be raised with more masculine care." She cocked her head to the side.
"You lost your mother at an early age. Is your custom not similar?"
Sage shook her head.
"No, I am unusual."
The princess stepped back and giggled, putting her hand over her mouth. Sage frowned. She must have chosen a word that didn't quite mean what she thought.
"I just said I am not shaped correctly, didn't I?"
Lonnie burst out laughing.
"Yes, you did."
Chapter 81.
Alex stretched and exercised within his cell, working off some of his restlessness, while trying to keep the shackles quiet for the Kimisar sleeping across from him. Stesh said they typically slept during the day, no doubt waiting for the night they'd escape and carry out their mission. Judging from the cycle of meals, it was now afternoon. The man who fed them hadn't responded when Alex spoke to him in Kimisar, so he likely didn't speak the language. Alex had no way to tell anyone what he knew. The door down the passage opened, and a man strode toward them, carrying a torch. When he stopped between the occupied cells, Stesh looked up from his straw mattress.
"Is it tonight?"
he asked lazily. The man answered in Kimisar.
"No, I need a few more days. Plans may be changing."
It was him, the traitor. Alex shrank back against the wall, trying to be invisible. Stesh sat up, suddenly wide awake.
"I don't like the sound of that."
"You will do as ordered," the Kazmuni man said.
"But your target is the same. My targets may have changed."
The Kimisar looked unconcerned once more.
"Decide who you want blamed already and let us out. Cameron needs a bath."
The man ignored him and turned to face Alex.
"You're the one brought in yesterday,"
he said in Kimisar. Alex squinted against the bright light.
"I am,"
he answered. The hand that held the torch wore several rings with large stones. Alex could barely see his knuckles.
"Why were you in the desert?"
Stesh answered for Alex.
"Gizpan says he was in Demora for the past year."
"That does not explain why he came to Kazmun."
Alex swallowed.
"I was pursuing two Demorans."
The man brightened. He pulled a ring of keys from his belt.
"Come with me. I wish to discuss them."
He wanted to know more about Sage and Nicholas so he could frame them for Banneth's murder. Stesh stood and moved to the front of his cell.
"I'm sure our friend can tell you many, many things about Demora."
His teeth glittered in the torchlight, making him look like a predator.
"And if he doesn't want to, we'll know why."
The man glanced back with the key half turned in the lock.
"Why would that be?"
"Because he is not Kimisar."
Alex's heart skipped a beat and then began pounding in his chest. What had given him away? The Kazmuni frowned at him.
"Demoran?"
"Either that, or he has become Demoran in the last year. He wouldn't be the first."
Stesh spat in disgust. The sound of the tumblers of the lock falling into place echoed through the room. Alex charged out of the cell, slamming the Kazmuni against the bars across the way. The torch dropped into a puddle and sizzled before going out as Alex swung the chain linking his wrists at the man's head. In the sudden darkness, he half missed and nearly lost his balance. He turned and ran for the main door, but the chain between his ankles wasn't long enough, and the Kazmuni man had almost caught up with him as Alex burst out the door. The guard outside jumped from where he leaned against the wall, but Alex was already down the corridor, going back the way he remembered arriving from. They wouldn't understand him, but speaking in Demoran might get their attention.
"I need to speak with the king," he shouted.
Something low to the ground snapped out and caught the chain linking his feet, and he crashed shoulder first onto the stone floor. Three men were on him in a second, punching and pinning him down. He saw the blow coming and knew what it would do. Alex opened his mouth to scream his last hope of getting them to listen. Her name. Chapter 82. There were no good choices. Hazar could surrender to the Norsari and the force that had joined them. He could attempt to push his way through Jovan and then Tazmet and back to Kimisara. Or he could try to make his way through Kazmun to the southernmost pass. His men were broken and lost, and the Demorans might have treated them with mercy if Hazar hadn't just tried to kidnap their prince.
The Norsari returned without the boy, and it didn't matter if he was now in Kazmuni hands. The Khemisar would be blamed for his loss. Even the option of returning to the places and employments that sheltered the scattered Khemisar in the past year was gone. As for Chauvin, he reminded himself, as he was no longer hiding among Damorins. It would be sealed even tighter now that the Damorins knew the Khemisar were here. If by some miracle they made it through, the last he'd heard, the Damorin army's headquarters were based in the fortress on the other side. He'd be leading his men straight into the hornet's nest. That left Kazmin. Hazar ordered everyone to disperse and make their way non-directly to the area south of the Kaz River's first major fork by the full moon. The tactic worked. The Norsari were left chasing so many ghosts that the Khemisar were able to stay one step ahead. Then, Hazar led the remaining 141 men into the foothills of the Katrix and followed the mountain range south. The terrain made for slow going, but the Damorins didn't pursue them. By the 10th day, Hazar had forgotten what it felt like to walk on level ground, to take a step without wondering if the earth would slide away. Water was scarce in this spirit-forsaken place. The few spots where melted snow trickled down the mountainside had dried up for the year, and only small rodents and scrubby bushes survived the arid steppes. The starving and bedraggled lot behind him had been further reduced by a tenth. His lost were buried in the shifting slopes of the Katrix, several by nature itself. The most recent rock slide had covered its victims, which was a relief at the time. He'd noted their names and moved on. 125 remained of the original company, but he'd fought shorter battles with greater casualties. That's what this was. A battle. And every footstep he heard behind him was a victory. Chapter 83. Alex pushed the boat into the water as Khemisar closed in from behind. When he tried to climb in, she pushed him away. "I don't need you to protect me." Alex shook his head. "Let me in. There's room for all of us." "I can do this myself." She shoved him again, and he stood with his hands up in surrender as the boat slipped away. To her horror, she realized she had a bow in her hands and an arrow aimed at his heart. "I love you," he whispered. She let the arrow fly. Sage woke, screaming, only seeing darkness. Then, remembering where she was, she crawled off the low, wide bed without fully untangling from the blankets. Once free, she stumbled to the door open to the outside. The cool air hit her sweat-drenched nightshirt, refreshing her a little, but not enough, and she ran across the patio and was sick in the decorative plants at the bottom of the steps. She sat back and wiped her face with her sleeve. So much for Banneth's garden. Sage rested her cheek on the cool stone of the knee-high wall. Was there protocol for vomiting in your host's flowers? Sage? Her eyes flew open. Polichessa? Lonnie stepped out of the shadows, pulling a silk dressing gown around her. Are you well? Sage lurched to her feet and found her knees were too shaky to hold her. An arm slipped around her for support. I'm sorry to wake you, she mumbled, turning her face away. I had a bad sleep. I was already awake. Come, I will take you to the fountain. Sage let herself be half-carried to the center of the courtyard, where a 6-foot-high fountain bubbled. Lonnie set her down on the wide marble edge of the pool and produced a metal cup from somewhere. Rinse your mouth. Sage gratefully accepted and obeyed, spitting into the grass off to the side, then drank what remained in the cup. I thank you, my princess. I need no thanks. It is what friends do. A day of shopping and pleasant conversation
under orders, did not a friendship make. Even a few hours in the training arena later did not, especially when one was with a princess. Sage trailed her fingers in the fountain, afraid to ask if Lonnie meant the word.
"Who is Alex?" Lonnie asked.
Sage froze.
"How do you know that name?"
"You were saying it in your sleep. Then you screamed it." Sage pulled her hand back from the water and fiddled with her cup.
"Is he your lover?"
"No," said Sage. "Not anymore. And we never..." He'd wanted to wait. There was to be no doubt that he married her because he wanted to, not because he had to. Lonnie glanced over her shoulder in the direction of her rooms.
"I think I would cry and scream too, if I lost someone I loved."
There was a long pause.
"Why did you part?"
Sage had resisted saying it until now.
"He is dead. I am very sorry."
Lonnie reached across and put a hand on Sage's knee.
"How did it happen?"
When Charlie had died, Alex blamed himself, and Sage had never understood why, until now. Even if the Duke had been the one to cut Charlie's throat, it was Alex's decisions that had put his brother in that room. Sage looked down at her hands.
"I killed him."
"You what?"
"He died escaping Nicholas and me to Kasman."
Lonnie shook her head.
"That does not mean you killed him, Sage."
"Maybe not physically."
"I lied to him. Right before the battle, I admitted my betrayal."
Why couldn't she cry?
"I killed his heart," she whispered.
"No," Lonnie said firmly. "He gave his life for yours. How can you doubt his love?"
"I don't doubt," Sage said. "But he knew not I loved him still. He knew not I was sorry."
Lonnie was silent for a few moments. Then she scooted closer to Sage.
"Do you know who Tomosa was?"
"Was she Baneth's queen?"
"Yes,"
said Lonnie.
"It was an arrangement neither wanted."
"Then why married him to her, or not call for a wait?"
"You made marriages in your own country. You know why such unions are made."
Lonnie folded her hands on her lap.
"I think he was afraid to act against the council. I was only 6 years, so I saw this through the eyes of a child. But looking back, I understand better what that time was like. Our father and two older brothers died in the year before, and our mother only a few weeks after his crowning. He was young and frightened and alone."
Baneth had been third in line for the throne.
"He expected never to be king?"
Lonnie shook her head.
"He was to be a scholar at the school where his son now studies. I barely knew him, but suddenly, he was all I had."
In the starlight, Sage could see Lonnie grimace.
"I think this is why he still treats me like a child, despite that I am half a mother to Reza."
The princess shifted uncomfortably.
"I do not know the arrangements in your country, but here it is unusual for a king and queen to have separate rooms. They obviously did their duty, but to the council, it was another excuse to pressure him. Even after Tomosa's death, they pushed him around. Sometimes I think he would leave for months at a time, visiting corners of the country, just to get away."
"Is that why he went in the desert this year?" Sage asked.
"Yes and no," Lonnie answered. "It has long been Baneth's dream to make peace with Demora and reopen trade. But the council resisted and turned people against the idea. Dev, Minister Cinda, told me all about it. My brother's solution was to make his yearly journeys to the place where he might accidentally make contact with Demorans."
Sage's stomach turned over. She and Nicholas were far more important than she'd realized. Their presence was a threat to a council
unwilling to lose the power they'd wielded for years. Everything the Damorans did or said could be used to undermine the king.
I would like to help, Baneth, she said. Me too, said Lonnie, but he does not make it easy.
Chapter 84 Lonnie was disgustingly cheerful the next morning. She came into Sage's rooms and hopped onto the bed.
Wake up, she chirped. You're being presented to the council today. You have to get dressed.
The meeting is after breakfast, Sage protested, pulling the covers over her head.
Yes,
the princess yanked the blanket down.
Which is why you must be ready before then.
Sage let Lonnie haul her to the wardrobe, full of dresses that had been delivered last night. Apparently, Lonnie had taken it upon herself to purchase everything Sage had looked at for more than 2 seconds.
You want to look humble, Lonnie said, but not fragile.
I think you forgot that style yesterday, Sage yawned as the princess sorted through the bright fabrics. Lonnie pulled a light-colored dress out.
I absolutely did not, she said, holding it up for approval.
Sage grimaced.
It's pink.
So is your face, said Lonnie. They match. Sage continued to glare at the princess until she shrugged and put the outfit back. A few seconds later, she pulled out a blue dress that was so light it was almost white.
This will make you look less pale.
Sage rolled her eyes.
Fine.
Lonnie not only shooed away the maid and dressed Sage herself, she combed and styled her hair.
No one had done that for Sage but Claire, the first time being, when they were on their way to the Concordium.
Sage let herself sink into the misery of missing her friend. It was safer to think about Claire than anyone else. Even with the short length, Lonnie managed to weave Sage's hair into a braid that hugged her head like a crown, then moved on to paint her face. Suddenly, Sage could bear it no longer. It had all become too much like preparing for her disastrous interview with the matchmaker.
Enough, she said. I'm not a doll.
The princess frowned, but didn't force the issue. When Sage went to put her daggers on her belt, however, Lonnie objected.
You're not going to a fight, Sage. You're wearing one.
Sage pointed to the curved knife at Lonnie's waist. Most Kazmuni carried one at all times, as a tool, more than anything. Lonnie pressed her lips together.
Just one, then.
Sage relented, and they went to breakfast together. Eating improved her mood enough that she thanked the princess. There really wouldn't have been enough time to prepare afterward. Lonnie took her by the arm and led Sage to the council chamber, Nicholas trailing behind them like a stray puppy. The meeting began with the sharing of water, though it was done in a business-like fashion, with a cup merely passed around the table. The king introduced her as a scholar of some renown, and she flushed. Nicholas must have put him up to that. With the exception of Minister Cinda, the council members did not appear impressed.
What is it you study, Mistress Sage?
The Minister of Rhodes asked, twisting his waxed mustache.
Fashion?
Beside her, Lonnie scowled. Just because I like pretty things doesn't mean I cannot grasp dull subjects, she muttered.
Does Palachessa have something to say?
The minister frowned at Lonnie, like she was a disobedient child. No, forgive my interruption.
Mistress Sage?
Sage cleared her throat. I am a student of languages and history. At least that was what was relevant at the moment. Thus I arrived in Kazmin with a grasp on your speech.
And your little boy?
Her lips twitched with the urge to smile, as Nicholas probably understood that. My brother isn't much for studying.
How did you come to be in Kazmin?
Asked a man whose title she'd forgotten. Sage recited a story with enough truth that she couldn't be caught in a lie.
We were fleeing a Kimisar attack. A boat was our best chance to escape, and we came into your territory. We were still being chased, so we accepted Kazman's protection. Your nation's generosity saved our lives, and for that, we will be forever grateful.
How convenient that my king was in the area,
the minister said sarcastically.
Our record of springs across the desert hadn't been verified in decades,
said Baneth, smoothly.
I was doing the Minister of Roads a favor. Saving life is always fortunate, added Minister Cinda. That it brings a chance for our nation to learn and grow is equally fortunate.
When he turned his head, Sage saw a large bruise on the side of his face. The back of his head also had a swollen area and a long vertical scab. The injuries looked recent.
What is it Mistress Sage wishes to accomplish now?
Asked the Minister of War, once again sniffing like he smelled something foul about her. We only wish to return home as soon as possible, she said. Our family would repay your efforts twice over.
The effort would be considerable, said the Minister of War with a sneer. Consider how our nation looks if we make such an effort to return our guests, said Minister Cinda.
Sage thought Lonnie would burst with pride beside her.
Very well, said the man who was equivalent to a Lord Chamberlain.
He'd spent the whole proceedings looking bored.
We will discuss the matter and decide what resources to commit.
He waved his hand.
Thank you for your attendance today.
Sage stood and bowed. Nicholas did the same. I thank you for your consideration, she said.
Princess Alania, you are also excused.
Lonnie's face reddened with anger, and Minister Cinda's hand on the table clenched into a fist, his knuckles curling under the large rings of state he wore. I may be able to contribute to the meeting, she said, as I have been attending them for many months now.
As I recall, you missed our last session to visit shops in town, said the Minister of War, dryly.
I was asked to do so by the king, Lonnie retorted.
She was attending to the needs of our guest, as only she was able, added Cinda.
The Chamberlain's thin mouth twisted in an ugly smile.
Spoken by a man who knows about attending to a lady's needs.
All the color drained from Cinda's face. Lonnie flushed scarlet. I wish to stay, she said. My presence harms nothing. Her eyes went to Baneth for support, but the king only shook his head slightly. She held his gaze for a dozen heartbeats, then shoved her seat away from the table and stormed out the door so fast Sage and Nicholas had to run to keep up. Chapter 85. Outside and well away from the chamber, the princess allowed herself to explode.
The nerve of that man!
She picked up a potted plant and hurled it against the wall, where it shattered. A servant rushed to clean up the mess.
You are excused, little girl, Lonnie said in a mocking voice. Why don't you go shopping, little girl?
That's not exactly what he said, Sage said carefully.
No, but it's exactly what he meant.
Lonnie frowned at the floral victim of her rage.
I am sorry for your trouble, she told the man on his knees, sweeping up the dirt. When that is repotted, you may put it in my room. I will care for it in apology.
He bowed his head in acknowledgement. Sage smiled wryly.
Will you share water with it and give it a name? Maybe I will.
The storm had passed. Lonnie grinned and plopped down on an upholstered couch under a colored glass window.
Did you see how Dev fought for you, and how angry he was on my behalf?
Sage had appreciated Minister Cinda's efforts, but she'd also seen Lonnie's secret romance wasn't quite as secret as she believed.
I saw, she said, taking a seat beside her friend. I was glad to have a smile among so many frowns. I cannot wait to marry him,
Then I will not be shut out of council meetings and important matters.
How will that help?
Asked Nicholas, who had followed them. His Kazmuni speech lagged far behind his understanding, and he spoke slowly and awkwardly.
Because then, Lonnie hesitated, as the wife of a council member, I will have more standing.
I saw not other wives, the prince said. You are princess. There is no higher but queen, and there is none now.
Lonnie frowned, and Sage saw Nicholas had a good point. Lonnie and Minister Cinda's love might be genuine, but the princess was a bit blind on what she stood to gain.
Nicholas, Sage said, will you excuse us?
The prince shrugged and left.
Lonnie, she said quietly, how far has your relationship with Minister Cinda gone?
Lonnie blushed a little.
Don't be such a taku, Sage. I'm going to marry him.
After overhearing Lonnie and Cinda, Sage wasn't surprised. But it still complicated things. As for being called a taku, an overbearing grandmother, she'd been just as willing if Alex had ever wanted. Sage cut that thought off before it could gain traction.
What power does a Chessa's husband have? She asked.
Not more than Dev already has, said Lonnie. He will actually have to resign his current position as Minister of Finance. It is a conflict of interest to have two royals with direct access to the treasury.
Will he leave the council?
Lonnie nodded.
Yes, but I have plans for him.
She leaned toward Sage and lowered her voice.
General Pigface will be retiring soon. All I must do is plant the idea in Banneth's head that Dev is the man for the job. Minister of War is traditionally held by the king's brother or uncle anyway. Pigface is only there because our brothers died. She sat back. Of course, Dev has no idea that is my intention.
I think what Kazmin needs is a princess on the council, said Sage. As Nicholas said, there is no woman higher than you.
Lonnie smiled thoughtfully. Perhaps what Kazmin really needs is a queen.
Sage didn't like the look on her friend's face.
What happened to Minister Cinda? She asked to change the subject. His head was hurt.
Oh, you didn't hear about yesterday? The princess brightened.
He was auditing the prison's weekly accounts when a Kimisar man tried to escape. But Dev stopped him. He was a hero, she boasted.
You have Kimisar prisoners here?
Lonnie nodded.
Two spies caught last month, and one who was brought in with you.
Can I see them?
Sage asked.
I don't see why not.
Chapter 86.
Lonnie led Sage down several winding staircases to the lowest levels of the palace. The air became damp and cool, and they frequently had to lift their skirts to step over puddles in the corridor.
It doesn't drain well, said Lonnie, pointing to one. The stones are worn from use, and that traps any water that drips from the ceiling. Perhaps we should fill them with cement, or carve grooves so the water can flow out.
Lonnie was much cleverer than she gave herself credit for. Eventually, they came to a landing with several guards. The princess waved her hand and they stood aside. Sage followed, thinking Lonnie knew her way around the prison as well as she did the marketplace.
Do you come here often? She asked.
I inspect when Banneth is gone, Lonnie answered. She walked up to a man who looked to be in charge and spoke with him briefly. He bowed and led the way down more steps and tunnels until they came to a guarded door. Within was a large room with metal bars running down either side of a central aisle. Lonnie swept past him with a thank you. The only occupied cells were at the far end. As Sage and Lonnie approached, both prisoners lifted their heads from the straw mats they slept on. In spite of the dank conditions, the prison was generally clean. The guard came running up behind Sage, carrying a torch
to supplement the dim light coming through a grate in the ceiling.
"Stay back, my princess," he called. "These men are dangerous."
Lani rolled her eyes at Sage. "And I thought these men were here for a picnic." One of the prisoners stood and walked to the front of his cell.
"Princess, eh?"
he said in Kimisar. The man looked at Lani with disdain.
"I think I understand a few things now."
The other man sat up and squinted at Lani in the same way. Neither man seemed bothered by their surroundings, like they had become a way of life. Lani ignored them and addressed the guard. "Where is the third man?"
"Haven't seen him since yesterday," said the prisoner, before the guard could answer. "Heard him a few times, though."
The guard coughed and rubbed his throat.
"He needed extra restraint."
"Have you seen enough of them?" Lani asked Sage, who nodded. Something about both men made her skin crawl. "Take us to the third man," Lani told the guard. Sage stepped aside so Lani could go first. The Kimisar called out to her.
"Hey, Demorin girl."
Sage looked back over her shoulder without thinking. The man met her eyes and winked.
"I hope you like it down here."
She couldn't get out of there fast enough. A few turns down the hall, the guard stopped before an iron door.
"He's in here, Palachessa."
Lani stepped up and slid a narrow horizontal window open to look inside. Sage stood on her toes next to her. The tiny room was completely dark, except for the slash of light from the opening in the door. "I can't see anything," she said. At her voice, there was movement within the chamber. A shadow shifted, and chains rattled. Though she knew she was safe, Sage jumped back. "He can barely move."
"It is necessary," said the guard, closing the window with a rusty screech.
The chains rattled again, weakly, and Sage took another step away from the cell. Surely he can be restrained in another way.
"That man nearly escaped again last night, after his first attempt with Minister Cinda in the afternoon. He injured two guards and almost killed a water boy."
"He would be better treated if he behaved," said Lani. It was one thing to know such monstrous men existed, but it was quite another to see what had to be done to contain them. Did such conditions make them more vicious, like caged fighting animals? "Perhaps he was desperate," said Sage. The princess frowned. "Sage, this man was part of the attack that killed Alex, no?" Sage twisted her hands as the image of Alex falling off his horse played in her mind. Lani was right, but the room was little bigger than a coffin. Just the thought of being shut inside made it difficult for Sage to breathe. "How much longer will he be kept in there?" she asked.
"That is not my decision, mistress," the guard said nervously.
Lani pursed her lips. "I can order him moved." She raised an eyebrow at Sage. "Is that what you wish?" Sage thought of the bruises on Minister Cinda's face, and of a terrified little boy being held hostage. Even considering that, the man's treatment made her queasy. Or perhaps it was guilt for having tried to kill him herself. "Yes?" she said, unsure. The princess turned her gaze to the guard, who shifted his feet and hesitated before responding.
"I want to obey my princess, but I must also answer to my superiors."
"I understand," said Lani magnanimously. "You will relay my order then, and if the head guard disagrees, he has until sunset to personally explain to me why." The man bowed, looking relieved.
"Yes, Palachessa."
Sage glanced at the iron door, feeling a strange pull. The man would be put in better conditions by nightfall. She wondered if he'd heard and understood their discussion. Probably not. Maybe she should say something to him. But what? "Are you satisfied, Sage?" asked Lani. "Or is there more you would like to see?" The underlying purpose of speaking to the man would only be to make him grateful to her and make herself feel better. Sage turned away.